AJ's annual party. AJ turns to the guests.
Cunts, pricks, fence traddlers, tonight I give you that internationally known impresario of blue movies and shortwave TV, the one, the only, the great Slash Tubitch.
He points to a red velvet curtain 60 feet high. Lightning rends the curtain from top to bottom. The great Slash Tubitch stands revealed. His face is immense, immobile, like a Chimu funeral urn. He wears full evening dress, blue cape and blue monocle, huge gray eyes with tiny black pupils that seem to spit needles. Only the coordinate factualist can meet his gaze. When he is angered, the charge of it will blow his monocle across the room. Many an ill-starred actor has felt the icy blast of Slash Tubitch's displeasure.
Get out of my studio, you cheap four-flushing ham! Did you think to pass a counterfeit orgasm on me, the great Slash Tubitch? I could tell if you come by regard the big toe! Idiot! Mindless scum! Insolent baggage! Go peddle thy ass and know that it takes sincerity and art and devotion to work for Slash Tubitch, not shoddy trickery, dubbed gasps, rubber turds and vials of milk concealed in the ear, and shots of yohimbine sneaked in the wings.
Yohimbine, derived from the bark of a tree growing in Central Africa, is the safest and most efficient aphrodisiac. It operates by dilating the blood vessels on the surface of the skin, particularly in the genital area. Slash Tubitch ejects his monocle. It sails out of sight, returns like a boomerang into his eye. He pirouettes and disappears in a blue mist, cold as liquid air. Fade out. On screen. Red-haired, green-eyed boy, white skin with a few freckles, kissing a thin brunette girl in slacks. Clothes and hairdo suggest existentialist bars of all the world cities. They are seated on low bed covered in white silk. The girl opens his pants with gentle fingers and pulls out his cock, which is small and very hard. A drop of lubricant gleams at its tip like a pearl. She caresses the crown gently.
Strip, Johnny.
He takes off his clothes with swift, sure movements and stands naked before her, his cock pulsing. She makes a motion for him to turn around, and he pirouettes across the floor, parodying a model, hand on hip. She takes off her shirt. Her breasts are high and small, with erect nipples. She slips off her underpants. Her pubic hairs are black and shiny. He sits down beside her and reaches for her breast. She stops his hands.
Darling, I want to rim you,
she whispers.
No, not now. Please, I want to. Well, all right. I'll go wash my ass. No, I'll wash it.
Oh, shucks now. It ain't dirty.
Yes, it is. Come on now, Johnny boy.
She leads him into the bathroom.
All right, get down.
He gets down on his knees and leans forward with his chin on the bath mat.
Allah, he says.
He looks back and grins at her. She washes his ass with soap and hot water, sticking her finger up it.
Does that hurt? No. Come along, baby.
She leads the way into the bedroom. He lies down on his back and throws his legs back over his head, clasping elbows behind his knees. She kneels down and caresses the backs of his thighs, his balls, running her fingers down the perineal divide. She pushes his cheeks apart, leans down and begins licking the anus, moving her head in a slow circle. She pushes at the sides of the asshole, licking deeper and deeper. He closes his eyes and squirms. She licks up the perineal divide, his small, tight balls. A great pearl stands out on the tip of his circumcised cock. Her mouth closes over the crown. She sucks rhythmically up and down, pausing on the upstroke and moving her head around in a circle. Her hand plays gently with his balls, slides down and middle finger up his ass. As she sucks down toward the root of his cock, she tickles his prostate mockingly. He grins and farts. She is sucking his cock now in a frenzy. His body begins to contract, pulling up toward his chin. Each time the contraction is longer. Hoo-wee! The boy yells, every muscle tense, his whole body straining to empty through his cock. She drinks his jism, which fills her mouth in great hot spurts. He lets his feet flop back onto the bed. He arches his back and yawns. Mary is strapping on a rubber penis.
Steely Dan 3 from Yokohama, she says,
caressing the shaft. Milk spurts across the room.
Be sure that milk is pasteurized. Don't go giving me some kind of awful cow disease like anthrax or glanders or aftosa. When I was a transvestite, Liz in Chai used to work as an exterminator, make advances to pretty boys for the thrill of being beaten as a man. Later I catch this one kid, overpower him with supersonic judo I learned from an old lesbian Zen monk. I tie him up, strip off his clothes with a razor, and fuck him with Steely Dan 1. He is so relieved I don't castrate him, literal, he come all over my bedbug spray.
What happened to Steely Dan 1?
He was torn in two by a bull dyke. Most terrific vaginal grip I ever experienced. She could cave in a lead pipe. It was one of her parlor tricks.
And Steely Dan, too?
Chewed to bits by a famished candiru in the upper baboon's asshole. And don't say whee this time.
Why not? It's real boyish.
Barefoot boy, check thy bull heads with the madam.
He looks at the ceiling, hands behind his head, cock pulsing.
So what shall I do? Can't shit with that dingus up me. I wonder, is it possible to laugh and come at the same time? I recall during the war at the jockey club in Cairo, me and my asshole buddy Lou, both gentlemen by act of Congress. Nothing else could have done such a thing to either of us. So we got laughing so hard we piss all over ourselves, and the waiters say, "You bloody hash heads, get out of here." I mean, if I can laugh the piss out of me, I should be able to laugh out jism. So tell me something real funny when I start coming. You can tell by certain premonitory quiverings of the prostate gland.
She puts on a record, metallic cocaine bebop. She greases the dingus, shoves the boy's legs over his head, and works it up his ass with a series of corkscrew movements of her fluid hips. She moves in a slow circle, revolving on the axis of the shaft. She rubs her hard nipples across his chest. She kisses him on neck and chin and eyes. He runs his hand down her back to her buttocks, pulling her into his ass. She revolves faster, faster. His body jerks and writhes in convulsive spasms.
"Hurry up, please," she says. "The milk is getting cold."
He does not hear. She presses her mouth against his. Their faces run together. His sperm hits her breast with light, hot licks. Mark is standing in the doorway. He wears a turtleneck black sweater, cold, handsome, narcissistic face, green eyes and black hair. He looks at Johnny with a slight sneer, his head on one side, hands in his jacket pockets, a graceful hoodlum ballet. He jerks his head, and Johnny walks ahead of him into the bedroom. Mary follows.
"All right, boys,"
she says, sitting down naked on a pink silk dais overlooking the bed.
"Get with it."
Mark begins to undress with fluid movements, hip rolls, squirms out of his turtleneck sweater, revealing his beautiful white torso in a mocking belly dance. Johnny deadpan, face frozen, breath quick, lips dry, removing his clothes and dropping them on the floor. Mark lets his shorts fall on one foot. He kicks like a chorus girl, sending the shorts across the room. Now he stands naked, his cock stiff, straining up and out. He runs slow eyes over Johnny's body. He smiles and licks his lips. Mark drops on one knee, pulling Johnny across his back by one arm. He stands up and throws him 6 feet onto the bed. Johnny lands on his back and bounces. Mark jumps up and grabs Johnny's ankles, throwing his legs over his head. Mark's lips are drawn back in a tight snarl. "All right, Johnny boy," He contracts his body slow and steady as an oiled machine, pushing his cock up Johnny's ass. Johnny gives a great sigh, squirming in ecstasy. Mark hitches his hands behind Johnny's shoulders, pulling him down onto his cock, which is buried to the hilt in Johnny's ass. Great whistles through his teeth. Johnny screams like a bird. Mark is rubbing his face against Johnny's, snarl gone, face innocent and boyish, as his whole liquid being spurts into Johnny's quivering body. A train roars through him, whistle-blowing. Boat whistle, foghorn, skyrockets burst over oily lagoons, penny arcades open into a maze of dirty pictures, ceremonial cannon boom in the harbor. A scream shoots down a white hospital corridor, out along a wide, dusty street between palm trees, whistles out across the desert like a bullet. Vulture wings husk in the dry air. A thousand boys come at once in outhouses, bleak public school toilets, attics, basements, tree houses, Ferris wheels, deserted houses, limestone caves, rowboats, garages, barns, rubbly windy city outskirts behind mud walls, smell of dried excrement. Black dust blowing over lean copper bodies, ragged pants dropped to cracked, bleeding bare feet. Place where vultures fight over fish heads. By jungle lagoons, vicious fish snap at white sperm floating on black water. Sandflies bite the copper ass. Howler monkeys like wind in the trees. Land of great brown rivers where whole trees float. Bright-colored snakes in the branches. Pensive lemurs watch the shore with sad eyes. A red plane traces arabesques in blue substance of sky. A rattlesnake strikes, a cobra rears, spreads, spits white venom, pearl and opal chips fall in a slow, silent rain through air, clear as glycerin. Time jumps like a broken typewriter. The boys are old men. Young hips quivering and twitching in boy spasms go slack and flabby, draped over an outhouse seat, a park bench, a stone wall in Spanish sunlight, a sagging furnished room bed, outside red brick slum in clear winter sunlight, twitching and shivering in dirty underwear, probing for a vein in the junk-sick morning, in an Arab cafe muttering and slobbering. The Arabs whisper, "Mejoob," and edge away. A Mejoob is a special sort of religious Muslim lunatic, often epileptic, among other disorders.
"The Muslims must have blood and jism. See, see where Christ's blood streams in the firmament,"
howls the Mejoob. He stands up screaming, and black blood spurts solid from his last erection. A pale white statue standing there as if he had stepped whole across the great fence, climbed it innocent and calm as a boy climbs the fence to fish in the forbidden pond. In a few seconds he catches a huge catfish. The old man will rush out of a little black hut, cursing with a pitchfork, and the boy runs laughing across the Missouri field. He finds a beautiful pink arrowhead and snatches it up as he runs with a flowing swoop of young bone and muscle. His bones blend into the field. He lies dead by the wooden fence, a shotgun by his side. Blood on frozen red clay seeps into the winter stubble of Georgia. The catfish billows out behind him. He comes to the fence and throws the catfish over into blood-streaked grass. The fish lies squirming and squawking, vaults the fence. He snatches up the catfish and disappears up a flint-studded red clay road between oaks and persimmons, dropping red-brown leaves in a windy fall sunset, green and dripping in summer dawn, black against a clear winter day. The old man screams curses after him. His teeth fly from his mouth and whistle over the boy's head. He strains forward, his neck cords tight as steel hoops. Black blood spurts in one solid piece over the fence, and he falls a fleshless mummy by the fever grass. Thorns grow through his ribs. The windows break in his hut. Dusty glass slivers in black putty. Rats run over the floor and boys jack off in the dark, musty bedroom on summer afternoons and eat the berries that grow from his body and bones, mouths smeared with purple-red juices. The old junkie has found a vein. Blood blossoms in the dropper like a Chinese flower. He pushes home the heroin, and the boy who jacked off 50 years ago shines immaculate through the ravaged flesh, filling the outhouse with the sweet, nutty smell of young male lust. How many years threaded on a needle of blood? Hands slack on lap, he sits looking out at the winter dawn with the canceled eyes of junk. The old queer squirms on a limestone bench in Chapultepec Park as Indian adolescents walk by, arms around each other's necks and ribs, straining his dying flesh to occupy young buttocks and thighs, tight balls and spurting cocks. Mark and Johnny sit facing each other in a vibrating chair, Johnny impaled on Mark's cock.
All set, Johnny? Turn it on.
Mark flips the switch and the chair vibrates. Mark tilts his head, looking up at Johnny, his face remote, eyes cool and mocking on Johnny's face. Johnny screams and whimpers. His face disintegrates as if melted from within. Johnny screams like a mandrake, blacks out as his sperm spurts, slumps against Mark's body, an angel on the nod. Mark pats Johnny's shoulder absently. Room like gymnasium. The floor is foam rubber, covered in white silk. One wall is glass. The rising sun fills the room with pink light. Johnny is led in, hands tied between Mary and Mark. Johnny sees the gallows and sags with a great, oh, his chin pulling down towards his cock. His legs bending at the knees, sperm spurts arching almost vertical in front of his face. Mark and Mary are suddenly impatient and hot. They push Johnny forward onto the gallows platform covered with moldy jock straps and sweatshirts. Mark is adjusting the noose.
Well, here you go.
Mark starts to push Johnny off the platform. Mary.
No, let me.
She locks her hands behind Johnny's buttocks, puts her forehead against him, smiling into his eyes. She moves back, pulling him off the platform into space. His face swells with blood. Mark reaches up with one lithe movement and snaps Johnny's neck, sound like a stick broken in wet towels. A shudder runs down Johnny's body. One foot flutters like a trapped bird. Mark has draped himself over a swing and mimics Johnny's twitches, closes his eyes and sticks his tongue out. Johnny's cock springs up and Mary guides it up her cunt, writhing against him in a fluid belly dance, groaning and shrieking with delight. Sweat pours down her body. Hair hangs over her face in wet strands.
"Cut him down, Mark!"
she screams. Mark reaches over with a snap knife and cuts the rope, catching Johnny as he falls, easing him onto his back with Mary still impaled and writhing. She bites away Johnny's lips and nose and sucks out his eyes with a pop. She tears off great hunks of cheek. Now she lunches on his prick. Mark walks over to her and she looks up from Johnny's half-eaten genitals, her face covered with blood, eyes phosphorescent. Mark puts his foot on her shoulder and kicks her over on her back. He leaps on her, fucking her insanely. They roll from one end of the room to the other, pinwheel end over end, and leap high in the air like great hooked fish.
"Let me hang you, Mark. Let me hang you, please, Mark. Let me hang you."
"Sure, baby." He pulls her brutally to her feet and pins her hands behind her.
"No, Mark! No! No! No!"
she screams, shitting and pissing in terror as he drags her to the platform. He leaves her tied on the platform in a pile of old used condoms while he adjusts the rope across the room and comes back carrying the noose on a silver tray. He jerks her to her feet and tightens the noose. He sticks his cock upper and waltzes around the platform and off into space, swinging in a great arc. "Hoo-wee!" he screams, turning into Johnny. Her neck snaps. A great fluid wave undulates through her body. Johnny drops to the floor and stands poised and alert like a young animal. He leaps about the room. With a scream of longing that shatters the glass wall, he leaps out into space, masturbating end over end, 3,000 feet down, his sperm floating beside him. He screams all the way against the shattering blue of sky, the rising sun burning over his body like gasoline, down past great oaks and persimmons, swamp cypress and mahogany, to shatter in liquid relief in a ruined square paved with limestone. Weeds and vines grow between the stones, and rusty iron bolts, 3 feet thick, penetrate the white stone, stain it shit brown of rust. Johnny douses Mary with gasoline from an obscene chimu jar of white jade. He anoints his own body. They embrace, fall to the floor, and roll under a great magnifying glass set in the roof. Burst into flame with a cry that shatters the glass wall, roll into space, fucking and screaming through the air, burst in blood and flames and soot on brown rocks under a desert sun. Johnny leaps about the room in agony. With a scream that shatters the glass wall, he stands spread-eagle to the rising sun, blood spurting out his cock. A white marble god, he plummets through epileptic explosions into the old Medjoob writhe in shit and rubbish by a mud wall under a sun that scars and grabs the flesh into goose pimples. He is a boy sleeping against the mosque wall, ejaculates wet dreaming into 1,000 cunts, pink and smooth as seashells, feeling the delight of prickly pubic hairs slide up his cock. Johnny and Mary in hotel room, music of East St. Louis toodaloo. Warm spring wind blows faded pink curtains in through open window. Frogs croak in vacant lots where corn grows, and boys catch little green garter snakes under broken limestone, steely, stained with shit, and threaded with rusty barbed wire. Neon, chlorophyll green, purple, orange, flashes on and off. Johnny extracts a candiru from Mary's cunt with his calipers. He drops it into a bottle of mezcal, where it turns into a maguey worm. He gives her a douche of jungle bone softener. Her vaginal teeth flow out mixed with blood and cysts. Her cunt shines fresh and sweet as spring grass. Johnny licks Mary's cunt, slow at first, with rising excitement, parts the lips and licks inside, feeling the prickle of pubic hairs on his tumescent tongue. Arms thrown back, breasts pointing straight up, Mary lies transfixed with neon nails. Johnny moves up her body, his cock with a shining round opal of lubricant at the open slit, slides through her pubic hairs and enters her cunt to the hilt, drawn in by a suction of hungry flesh. His face swells with blood, green lights burst behind his eyes, and he falls with a scenic railway through screaming girls. Damp hairs on the back of his balls dry to grass in the warm spring wind. High jungle valley vines creep in the window. Johnny's cock swells, great rank buds burst out. A long tuber root creeps from Mary's cunt, feels for the earth. The bodies disintegrate in green explosions. The hut falls in ruins of broken stone. The boy is a limestone statue, a plant sprouting from his cock, lips parted in the half-smile of a junkie on the nod. The beagle has stashed the heroin in a lottery ticket. One more shot. Tomorrow the cure. The way is long. Hard-ons and bring-downs are frequent. It was a long time over the stony reg to the oasis of date palms where Arab boys shit in the well and rock and roll across the sands of Muscle Beach, eating hot dogs and spitting out gold teeth and nuggets. Toothless and strictly from the long hunger, ribs you could wash your filthy overalls on, that corrugate. They quaver down from the outrigger in Easter Island and stalk ashore on legs stiff and brittle as stilts. They nod in club windows, fallen into the fat of lack-need, to sell a slim body. The date palms have died of meat lack, the well filled with dried shit and mosaic of a thousand newspapers. Russia denies, the Home Secretary views with pathic alarm. The trap was sprung at 12:02. At 12:30 the doctor went out to eat oysters, returned at 2 to clap the hanged man jovially on the back.
What, aren't you dead yet? Guess I'll have to pull your leg. Ha ha, can't let you choke at this rate. I'd get a warning from the president, and what a disgrace if the dead wagon cart you out alive. My balls would drop off with the shame of it, and I apprenticed myself to an experienced ox. 1, 2, 3, pull!
The sailplane falls silent as erection, silent as greased glass broken by the young thief with old woman hands and canceled eyes of junk. In a noiseless explosion, he penetrates the broken house, stepping over the greased crystals. A clock ticks loud in the kitchen. Hot air ruffles his hair. His head disintegrates in a heavy duck load. The old man flips out a red shell and pirouettes around his shotgun.
Aw, shucks, fellers, 'twarn't nothing. Fish in the barrel, money in the bank. Round-heeled boy, one greased shot, brain goose, and he flop in an obscene position. Can you hear me from where you are, boy? I was young myself once and heard the siren call of easy money and women and tight boy ass and land sake don't get my blood up. I am subject to tell a tale, make your cock stand up and yip for the pink pearly way of young cunt, where the lovely brown mucus-covered palpitating tune of the young boy ass play your cock like a recorder. And when you hit the prostate, pearls, sharp diamonds gather in the golden lad balls, inexorable as a kidney stone. Sorry I had to kill you. The old gray mare ain't what she used to be. Can't run down an audience. Got to bring down that house on the wing. Run or sit. Like an old lion took bad with cavities, he need that Amident toothpaste keep a feller biting fresh at all times. Them old lions shit sure turn boy-eater. And who can blame them boys being so sweet, so cold, so fair in St. James Infirmary? Now, son, don't you get rigor mortis on me. Show respect for the aging prick. You may be a tedious old fuck yourself someday. Oh, I guess not. You have, like Houseman's barefoot, shameless catamite, the congealed Shropshire ingenue, set your fleet foot on the silo of change. But you can't kill those Shropshire boys. Been hanged so often he resisted like a gonococcus, half-castrate with penicillin, rallies to a hideous strength and multiplies geometric. So leave us cast a vote for decent acquittal and put an end to those beastly exhibitions for which the sheriff levy a pound of flesh. Sheriff. I'll lower his pants for a pound, folks. Step right up. A serious and scientific exhibit concerning the locality of the life center. This character has 9 inches, ladies and gentlemen. Measure them yourself inside. Only 1 pound, one queer $3 bill to see a young boy come 3 times at least. I never demean myself to process a eunuch completely against his will. When his neck snaps sharp, this character will shit sure come to rhythmic attention and spurt it out all over you.
The boy stands on the trap, shifting his weight from one leg to the other.
God, what a boy has to put up with in this business. Sure as shit some horrible old character get physical.
Trap falls. Rope sings like wind in wire. Neck snaps loud and clear as a Chinese gong. The boy cuts himself down with a switchblade, chases a screaming fag down the midway. The faggot dives through the glass of a penny arcade peep show and rims a grinning Negro. Fade out. Mary, Johnny, and Mark take a bow with the ropes around their necks. They are not as young as they appear in the blue movies. They look tired and petulant. Meeting of International Conference of Technological Psychiatry. Dr. Fingers Schaefer, the lobotomy kid, rises and turns on the conference the cold blue blast of his gaze.
Gentlemen, the human nervous system can be reduced to a compact and abbreviated spinal column. The brain, front, middle, and rear, must follow the adenoid, the wisdom tooth, the appendix. I give you my masterwork, the complete all-American de-anxietized man.
Blast of trumpets. The man is carried in naked by two Negro bearers who drop him on the platform with bestial sneering brutality. The man wriggles. His flesh turns to viscid, transparent jelly that drifts away in green mists, unveiling a monster black centipede. Waves of unknown stench fill the room, searing the lungs, grabbing the stomach. Schaefer wrings his hands, sobbing.
Clarence, how can you do this to me? Ingrates! Every one of them ingrates!
The conference start back, muttering in dismay. I'm afraid Schaefer has gone a bit too far. I sounded a word of warning. Brilliant chap, Schaefer, but man'll do anything for publicity.
Gentlemen, this unspeakable and in every sense illegitimate child of Dr. Schaefer's perverted brain must not see the light. Our duty to the human race is clear.
Man, he done seen the light, said one of the Negro bearers.
We must stomp out the un-American critter,
says a fat, frog-faced southern doctor who's been drinking corn out of a mason jar. He advances drunkenly, then halts, appalled by the formidable size and menacing aspect of the centipede.
Fetch gasoline, he bellows. We gotta burn the son of a bitch like an uppity nigger.
I'm not sticking my neck out, me,
says a cool, hip young doctor, high on LSD-25. Why, a smart DA could fade out.
Order in the court!
DA.
Gentlemen of the jury, these learned gentlemen claim that the innocent human creature they have so wantonly slain suddenly turned himself into a huge black centipede, and it was their duty to the human race to destroy this monster before it could, by any means at its disposal, perpetrate its kind. Are we to gulp down this tissue of horseshit? Are we to take these glib lies like a greased and nameless asshole? Where is this wondrous centipede?
We have destroyed it, they say, smugly.
And I would like to remind you, gentlemen and hermaphrodites of the jury, that this great beast, he points to Dr. Schaefer, has on several previous occasions appeared in this court charged with the unspeakable crime of brain rape. In plain English, he pounds the rail of the jury box, his voice rises to a scream. In plain English, gentlemen, forcible lobotomy!
The jury gasps. One dies of a heart attack. Three fall to the floor, writhing in orgasms of prurience. The DA points dramatically.
He it is, he and no other, who has reduced whole provinces of our fair land to a state bordering on the far side of idiocy. He it is who has filled great warehouses with row on row, tier on tier of helpless creatures who must have their every want attended. The drones, he calls them, with a cynical leer of pure, educated evil. Gentlemen, I say to you that the wanton murder of Clarence Cowie must not go unavenged. This foul crime shrieks like a wounded faggot for justice, at least.
The centipede is rushing about in agitation.
Man, that motherfucker's hungry, screams one of the bearers. I'm getting out of here, me.
A wave of electric horror sweeps through the conference. They storm the exits, screaming and clawing. The Market. Panorama of the city of Interzone. opening bars of East St. Louis toodaloo, at times loud and clear, then faint and intermittent like music down a windy street. The composite city where all human potentials are spread out in a vast, silent market. Minarets, palms, mountains, jungle, a sluggish river jumping with vicious fish, vast weed-grown parks where boys lie in the grass, play cryptic games. Not a locked door in the city. Anyone comes into your room at any time. The chief of police is a Chinese who picks his teeth and listens to denunciations presented by a lunatic. Every now and then the Chinese takes the toothpick out of his mouth and looks at the end of it. Hipsters with smooth copper-colored faces lounge in doorways, twisting shrunk heads on gold chains, their faces blank with an insect's unseeing calm. Behind them, through open doors, tables and booths and bars and kitchens and baths, copulating couples on rows of brass beds, crisscross of 1,000 hammocks, junkies tying up for a shot, opium smokers, hashish smokers, people eating, talking, bathing, back into a haze of smoke and steam. Gaming tables where the games are played for incredible stakes. From time to time, a player leaps up with a despairing cry, having lost his youth to an old man, or become Lata to his opponent. But there are higher stakes than youth or Lata, games where only two players in the world know what the stakes are. All houses in the city are joined. Houses of sod, high mountain Mongols blink in smoky doorways. Houses of bamboo and teak, houses of adobe, stone, and red brick, South Pacific and Maori houses, houses in trees and riverboats, wood houses 100 feet long sheltering entire tribes, houses of boxes and corrugated iron where old men sit in rotten rags, cooking down canned heat, great rusty iron racks rising 200 feet in the air from swamps and rubbish, with perilous partitions built on multi-level platforms and hammocks swinging over the void. Expeditions leave for unknown places with unknown purposes. Strangers arrive on rafts of old packing crates tied together with rotten rope. They stagger in out of the jungle, their eyes swollen shut from insect bites. They come down the mountain trails on cracked, bleeding feet, through the dusty, windy outskirts of the city, where people defecate in rows along adobe walls and vultures fight over fish heads. They drop down into parks in patched parachutes. They are escorted by a drunken cop to register in a vast public lavatory. The data taken down is put on pegs to be used as toilet paper. Cooking smells of all countries hang over the city, a haze of opium, hashish, the resinous red smoke of yahe, smell of the jungle and salt water and the rotting river and dried excrement and sweat and genitals. High mountain flutes, jazz and bebop, one-stringed Mongol instruments, gypsy xylophones, African drums, Arab bagpipes. The city is visited by epidemics of violence, and the untended dead are eaten by vultures in the streets. Albinos blink in the sun. Boys sit in trees, languidly masturbate. People eaten by unknown diseases watch the passerby with evil, knowing eyes. In the city market is the meat cafe. Followers of obsolete, unthinkable trades, doodling in Etruscan, addicts of drugs not yet synthesized, pushers of souped-up harmine, junk reduced to pure habit offering precarious vegetable serenity, liquids to induce lata, Tithonian longevity serums, black marketeers of World War III, excisers of telepathic sensitivity, osteopaths of the spirit, investigators of infractions denounced by bland, paranoid chess players, servers of fragmentary warrants taken down in hebephrenic shorthand, charging unspeakable mutilations of the spirit. Bureaucrats of spectral departments, officials of unconstituted police states, a lesbian dwarf who has perfected Operation Bang Utut. The lung erection that strangles a sleeping enemy, sellers of orgone tanks and relaxing machines, brokers of exquisite dreams and memories tested on the sensitized cells of junk sickness and bartered for raw materials of the will, doctors skilled in the treatment of diseases dormant in the black dust of ruined cities, gathering virulence in the white blood of eyeless worms, feeling slowly to the surface. And the human host, maladies of the ocean floor and the stratosphere, maladies of the laboratory and atomic war, a place where the unknown past and the emergent future meet in a vibrating, soundless hum, larval entities waiting for a live one. Section describing the city and the meat cafe, written in state of Yahe intoxication. Yahe, ayahuasca, pilde, natima are Indian names for Banisteriopsis caapi, a fast-growing vine indigenous to the Amazon region. Notes from Yahe State. Images fall slow and silent like snow. Serenity. All defenses fall. Everything is free to enter or to go out. Fear is simply impossible. A beautiful blue substance flows into me. I see an archaic, grinning face like South Pacific mask. The face is blue-purple, splotched with gold. The room takes on aspect of Near East whorehouse with blue walls and red-tasseled lamps. I feel myself turning into a negress. The black color silently invading my flesh. Convulsions of lust. My legs take on a well-rounded Polynesian substance. Everything stirs with a writhing, furtive life. The room is Near East, Negro, South Pacific, in some familiar place I cannot locate. Yahe is space-time travel. The room seems to shake and vibrate with motion. The blood and substance of many races, Negro, Polynesian, Mountain Mongol, Desert Nomad, Polyglot Near East, Indian, races as yet unconceived and unborn, passes through the body. Migrations, incredible journeys through deserts and jungles and mountains, stasis and death in closed mountain valley where plants grow out of genitals, vast crustaceans hatch inside and break the shell of body. Across the Pacific in an outrigger canoe to Easter Island. It occurs to me that preliminary Yahe nausea is motion sickness of transport to Yahe State. All medicine men use it in their practice to foretell the future, locate lost or stolen objects, to diagnose and treat illness, to name the perpetrator of a crime. Since the Indian straitjacket for Herr Boas, trade joke. Nothing so maddens an anthropologist as primitive man, referring to them contemptuously as our naked cousins, does not regard any death as accidental, and they are unacquainted with their own self-destructive trends, or perhaps feeling that these trends above all are subject to the manipulation of alien and hostile wills. Any death is murder. The medicine man takes Yahe, and the identity of the murderer is revealed to him. As you may imagine, the deliberations of the medicine man during one of these jungle inquests give rise to certain feelings of uneasiness among his constituents. Let's hope old Zuptetal don't wig and name one of the boys. Take a curare and relax. We got the fix in. But if he wig... Picking up on that natima all the time, he don't touch the ground in 20 years. I tell you, boss, nobody can hit the stuff like that. It cooks the brains. So we declare him incompetent. So Zuptetal reels out of the jungle and says the boys in the lower Tsipino territory done it, which surprises no one. Take it from an old brujo, dearie. They don't like surprises. A funeral passes through the market. Black coffin. Arabic inscriptions in filigreed silver, carried by 4 pallbearers. Procession of mourners singing the funeral song. Clem and Jody fall in beside them, carrying a coffin. The corpse of a hog bursts out of it. The hog is dressed in a jalaba. A keef pipe juts from its mouth. One hoof holds a packet of filthy pictures. A mezuzah hangs about its neck. Inscribed on the coffin, "This was the noblest Arab of them all." They sing hideous parody of the funeral song in false Arabic. Jody can do a fake Chinese spiel that'll just kill you, like an hysterical ventriloquist dummy. In fact, he precipitated an anti-foreign riot in Shanghai that claimed 3,000 casualties. "Stand up, Gertie, and show respect for the local gooks."
"I suppose one should."
"My dear, I'm working on the most marvelous invention, a boy who disappears as soon as you come, leaving a smell of burning leaves and a sound effect of distant train whistles. You ever make sex in no gravity? Your jism just floats out in the air like lovely ectoplasm, and female guests are subject to immaculate, or at least indirect, conception. Reminds me of an old friend of mine, one of the handsomest men I've ever known, and one of the maddest and absolutely ruined by wealth. He used to go about with a water pistol, shooting jism up career women at parties. Won all his paternity suits, hands down. Never use his own jism, you understand."
Fade out.
"Order in the court!"
Attorney for A.J.
"Conclusive tests have established that my client has no, personal connection with the, little accident of the charming plaintiff. Perhaps she is preparing to emulate the Virgin Mary and conceive immaculately, naming my client as a ghostly pander. I am reminded of a case in 15th century Holland where a young woman accused an elderly and respectable sorcerer of conjuring up a succubus who then had a carnal knowledge of the young person in question with the, under the circumstances, regrettable result of pregnancy. So the sorcerer was indicted as an accomplice and rampant voyeur before, during, and after the fact. However, gentlemen of the jury, we no longer credit such, legends, and a young woman attributing her, interesting condition to the attentions of a succubus would be accounted in these enlightened days a romanticist, or in plain English, a goddamn liar."
And now, the prophet's hour.
"Millions died in the mudflats. Only one blast free to lungs."
"Aye, aye, Captain," he said, squirting his eyes out on the deck.
"And who would put on the chains tonight? It is indicate to observe some caution in the upwind approach, the downwind having failed to turn up anything worth a rusty load. Señoritas are the wear this season in hell, and I'm tired with the long climb to a pulsing Vesuvius of alien pricks.
Need Orient Express out of here to no hide place, or mines are frequent in the area. Every day, dig a little, it takes up the time." Jackoff phantoms whisper hot into the bone ear. "Shoot your way to freedom."
"Christ!"
sneers the vicious, fruity old saint, applying pancake from an alabaster bowl.
"That cheap ham? You think I demean myself to commit a miracle? That one should have stood in Kearney. Step right up, Marquises and Marks, and bring the little Marks, too. Good for young and old, man and beast. The one and only legit son of man will cure a young boy's clap with one hand. By contact alone, folks. Create marijuana with the other, whilst walking on water and squirting wine out his ass. Now keep your distance, folks. You is subject to be irradiated by the sheer charge of this character." "And I knew him when, dearie. I recall we was doing an impersonation act, very high class, too, in Sodom. And that is one cheap town, strictly from hunger. Well, this citizen, this fucking Philistine, wandered in from Podunk Bale or someplace, called me a fucking fruit right on the floor, and I said to him, 3,000 years in show business, and I always keep my nose clean. Besides, I don't have to take any shit off an uncircumcised cocksucker." Later he come to my dressing room and made an apology. Turns out he's a big physician, and he was a lovely fella, too. "Buddha? A notorious metabolic junkie. Makes his own, you dig. In India, where they got no sense of time, the man is often a month late. Now let me see, is that the second or the third monsoon? I got like a meet in Ketchupur, about more or less. And all them junkies sitting around in the lotus posture, spitting on the ground and waiting on the man. So Buddha says, I don't have to take this sound. I'll, by God, metabolize my own junk.
Man, you can't do that. The revenuers will swarm all over you.
Over me they won't swarm. I got a gimmick, see? I'm a fucking holy man, as of right now.
Jeez, boss, what an angle.
Now, some citizens really wig when they make with the new religion. These frantic individuals do not know how to come on, no class to them. Besides, they are subject to be lynched. Like, who wants somebody hanging around being better than other folks? What are you trying to do, Jack? Give people a bad time? So we gotta play it cool, you dig? Cool. We gotta take it or leave it proposition here, folks. We don't shove anything up your soul, unlike certain cheap characters who shall be nameless and are nowhere. Clear the cave for action. I'm gonna metabolize a speedball and make with the fire sermon. Muhammad? Are you kidding? He was dreamed up by the Mecca Chamber of Commerce. An Egyptian ad man on the skids from the sauce, right? The continuity. I'll have one more, Gus. Then, by Allah, I will go home and receive a surah. Wait till the morning edition hits the souks. I am blasting Amalgamated Images wide open. The bartender looks up from his racing form. Yeah, and theirs will be a painful doom. Oh, quite. Now, Gus, I'll write you a check. You are only being the most notorious paper hanger in Greater Mecca. I am not a wall, Mr. Mohammed. Well, Gus, I got like two types publicity, favorable and otherwise. You want some otherwise already? I'm subject to receive a surah concerning bartenders who extendeth not credit to those in a needy way. And theirs will be a painful doom. Sold Arabia. He vaults over the bar. I'm not taking any more, Ahmed. Pick up thy surahs and walk. In fact, I'll help you. And stay out. I'll fix your wagon good, you unbelieving cocksucker. I'll close you up tight and dry as a junkie's asshole. I'll by Allah dry up the peninsula. It's a continent already. Leave what Confucius say, stand with little Audrey and the shaggy dogs. Lao Tzu? They scratch him already. And enough of these gooey saints with a look of pathic dismay as if they're getting fucked up the ass and try not to pay it any mind. And why should we let some old broken-down ham tell us what wisdom is? 3,000 years in show business and I always keep my nose clean. First, every fact is incarcerate, along with the male hustlers and those who desecrate the gods of commerce by playing ball in the streets, and some old white-haired fuck staggers out to give us the benefits of his ripe idiocy. Are we never to be free of this gray-beard loon lurking on every mountaintop in Tibet, subject to drag himself out of a hut in the Amazon, waylay one in the Bowery?
I've been expecting you, my son.
And you make a silo full of corn. Life is a school where every pupil must learn a different lesson. And now I will unlock my word hoard.
I do fear it much.
Nay, nothing shall stem the rising tide.
I can't stem him, boys, sauf qui peut. I tell you, when I leave the wise man, I don't even feel like a human. He converting my live orgones into dead bullshit.
So I got an exclusive. Why don't I make with the live word? The word cannot be expressed direct. It can perhaps be indicated by mosaic of juxtaposition, like articles abandoned in a hotel drawer, defined by negatives and absence. Think I'll have my stomach tucked. I may be old, but I'm still desirable.
The stomach tuck is surgical intervention to remove stomach fat, at the same time making a tuck in the abdominal wall, thus creating a flesh corset, which is, however, subject to break and spurt your horrible old guts across the floor. The slim and shapely FC models are, of course, the most dangerous. In fact, some extreme models are known as ONS, one-night stands, in the industry. Dr. Doodles Reinfest states bluntly, "Bed is the most dangerous place for an FC man." The FC theme song is, "Believe me, if all these endearing young charms..." An FC partner is indeed subject to fleet from your arms like fairy gifts fading away. In a white museum room full of sunlight, pink nude 60 feet high, vast adolescent muttering, silver guardrail, chasm 1,000 feet down into the glittering sunlight. Little green plots of cabbage and lettuce. Brown youths with adzes spied by the old queen across a sewage canal.
Oh, dear, I wonder if they fertilize with human excrement. Maybe they'll do it right now.
He flips out mother-of-pearl opera glasses, Aztec mosaic in the sun. Long line of Greek lads march up with alabaster bowls of shit, empty into the limestone marl hole. Dusty poplars shake across the red brick Plaza de Toros in the afternoon wind. Wooden cubicles around a hot spring. Rubble of ruined walls in a grove of cottonwoods. The benches worn smooth as metal by 1,000,000 masturbating boys. Greek lads white as marble fuck dog style on the portico of a great golden temple. Naked mugwump twangs a lute. Walking down by the tracks in his red sweater, met Sammy, the dockkeeper's son, with 2 Mexicans. "Hey, Skinny," he said, "want to get screwed?"
"Well, yeah."
On a ruined straw mattress, the Mexican pulled him up on all fours. Negro boy dance around them, beating out the strokes. Sun through a knothole, pink spot lights his cock. A waste of raw pink shame to the pastel blue horizon where vast iron mesas crash into the shattered sky. "It's all right," the god screams through you, 3,000-year rusty load. Hail of crystal skulls shattered the greenhouse to slivers in the winter moon. The American woman has left a whiff of poison behind in the dank St. Louis garden party. Pool covered with green slime in a ruined French garden. Huge pathic frog rises slowly from the water on a mud platform playing the clavichord. A solubi rushes into the bar and starts polishing the saint's shoes with the oil on his nose. The saint kicks him petulantly in the mouth. The solubi screams, whirls around, and shits on the saint's pants. Then he dashes into the street. A pimp looks after him speculatively. The saint calls the manager.
"Jesus, Al, what kind of creep joint you running here? My brand new fish skin dégagés?"
"I'm sorry, saint. He slipped by me." The solubi are an untouchable caste in Arabia, noted for their abject vileness. Deluxe cafes are equipped with solubi who rim the guests while they eat, holes in the seating benches being provided for this purpose. Citizens who want to be utterly humiliated and degraded. So many people do nowadays, hoping to jump the gun. Offer themselves up for passive homosexual intercourse to an encampment of solubis. "Nothing like it," they tell me. In fact, the solubi are subject to become wealthy and arrogant and lose their native vileness. What is origin of untouchable? Perhaps a fallen priest caste? In fact, untouchables perform a priestly function in taking on themselves all human vileness. AJ strolls through the market in black cape with a vulture perched on one shoulder. He stands by a table of agents.
"This you gotta hear. Boy in Los Angeles, 15-year-old. Father decided it's time for the boy to have his first piece of ass. Boy is lying on the lawn reading comic books. Father go out and say, 'Son, here's $20. I want you to go to a good whore and get a piece of ass off her.' So they drive to this plush jump joint, and the father say, 'All right, son, you're on your own. So ring the bell. When the woman come, give her the $20 and tell her you want a piece of ass.' Solid, Pop. So about 15 minutes later, the boy comes out. 'Well, son, did you get a piece of ass?' 'Yeah, this gash comes to the door, and I say I want a piece of ass and lay the double sawski on her. We go up to her trap, and she removed the dry goods. So I switch my blade and cut a big hunk off her ass. She raise a beef like I'm reduced to pull off one shoe and beat her brains out. Then I hump her for kicks.'"
Only the laughing bones remain, flesh over the hills and far away with the dawn wind and the train whistle. We are not unaware of the problem, and the needs of our constituents are never out of our mind, being their place of residence, and who can break a 99-year synapses lease? Another installment in the adventures of Clem Snide and the private asshole.
So I walk in the joint, and this female hustler sit at the bar, and I think, oh, God, you're Pool de Luxe already. I mean, it's like I see the gash before, so I don't pay her no mind at first. Then I dig she is rubbing her legs together and working her feet up behind her head, shoves it down to give herself a deuce job with a gadget sticks out of her nose the way a body can't help but notice. Iris, half Chinese and half Negro, addicted to dihydrooxyheroin, takes a shot every 15 minutes, to which end she leaves droppers and needles sticking out all over her. The needles rust in her dry flesh, which here and there has grown completely over a joint to form a smooth green-brown wen. On the table in front of her is a samovar of tea and a 20-pound hamper of brown sugar. No one has ever seen her eat anything else. It is only just before a shot that she hears what anyone says or talks herself. Then she makes some flat, factual statement relative to her own person.
My asshole is occluding. My cunt got terrible green juices.
Iris is one of Benway's projects.
The human body can run on sugar alone, goddammit. I am aware that certain of my learned colleagues who are attempting to belittle my genius work claim that I put vitamins and proteins into Iris's sugar clandestinely. I challenge these nameless assholes to crawl up out of their latrines and run a spot analysis on Iris's sugar and her tea. Iris is a wholesome American cunt. I deny categorically that she nourishes herself on semen. And let me take this opportunity to state that I am a reputable scientist, not a charlatan, a lunatic, or a pretended worker of miracles. I never claimed that Iris could subsist exclusive on photosynthesis. I did not say she could breathe in carbon dioxide and give off oxygen. I confess I have been tempted to experiment, being, of course, restrained by my medical ethics. In short, the vile slanders of my creeping opponents will inevitably fall back onto them and come to roost like a homing stool pigeon.